Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Our guest today is the special agent in charge of the DEA, Sherry Oz. Sherry, can you hear me?
I can. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Just so you know, we do have interns on the show, and there's two of them in the studio. They're high school students from University High School. And I think they actually have questions, and I know they have a meeting in a little while. So I'm going to let them, if it's okay with you, before we get into your bio, ask their question.
Sure. Let me at them. I'll recruit them.
There you go. Nathan?
Sure. So I heard before the show that you spent some time combating drugs in Florida. So my question to you is, how has your experience combating drugs differed between the two states?
So I've actually been in several states, and I will tell you that the face of narcotics, any place you go, it's a difficult battle, right? And it's a battle worth fighting. But every state has unique problems. Here in Arizona, we're at the tip of the spear. So we have huge problems with methamphetamine and fentanyl. It took much longer for methamphetamine synthetic narcotics to get to Florida, because Florida was traditionally more of a cocaine trafficking state. So it's the same job. It just has kind of our goal and what we're combating in each state is a little bit different.
Okay. And Maya, you have a question?
Yeah, good morning. So I was wondering about the recent passing of Prop 207 in Arizona and how that will affect our communities.
Oh, I'm very disappointed about that passing, as you can imagine. I've been in several states where I watched the same thing happen, and it does have a tremendous effect on the community. For us federally, it doesn't affect us because the federal law is going to supersede the state law regardless. So in my world, marijuana is illegal no matter what happens. Until that law changes, that's kind of what governs our enforcement efforts. But the impact on a state, you look at California, you look at Colorado, and you watch crime rise, one leads to the other, and they are intimately connected. As marijuana sales go up, so will the crime in that community.
It's unfortunate, but that's so true. So true. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what got you into the DEA?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I grew up in Chicago. I went to college in Milwaukee.
Awesome. Me too.
Super cold. Yay. Cold there, right?
Yes.
It's a no-brainer. I became a police officer in Phoenix simply because it was 80 degrees on the same day. It was 17 below in Milwaukee. So I worked in the 90s in Phoenix PD. I was in patrol. I became a detective. And then I got hired by DEA. I worked for 9 years as a special agent in Los Angeles. I became a supervisor in Miami for 7 years. I did a tour in Washington, D.C., where I worked as the recruiter and the chief of special agent hiring. I went to Seattle to be the assistant special agent in charge. And then I finally made it back to the home I chose here in Arizona as a special agent in charge here. I'm the mother of two amazing children, 3 dogs, 2 tortoises, and I'm also married to a DEA agent.
Oh, you're busy.
Yes.
You're very busy.
I am.
That's very cool. We were wondering about recruiting. Well, I have a question about internships first, because I know one of our listeners was asking, do they have an internship program? What are the qualifications and how do you get involved?
So the internship program had stalled for some time, and we are doing a resurgence. It is super. I was a DEA intern, and that was one of the reasons I knew that DEA was the right choice for me. Because this is more than a job. It's a calling. We don't do this for money. We do it because we're called to do it. It's a great job. But we do like to have interns there so they can see and be part of us. If you're around us and you understand our culture, and you enjoy the mission, you enjoy the hunt, DEA is the place for you. So we are hiring in all of our core employment opportunities right now on DEA.gov. We have intel analysts. We have diversion investigators, which is an awesome job. Special agents, which is what I am. Also administrative staff, chemists. We do it all. Interns, there will be unique opportunities coming up. They're few and far between, but monitor that DEA.gov and they'll be posted there.
What does a diversion person do?
Diversion investigators do a great job. They do a little bit of everything. They do some regulatory, and they mostly work with our registrants. Everybody who writes a prescription, touches a prescription, manufactures a prescription, gets a DEA number. And then we monitor the integrity of that number with investigators to ensure that all the rules are being followed and everyone is in compliance. And as we know, some of the opiate crisis that we have currently in this country was a result of some bad prescribing practices and some over-prescribing practices. So we kind of keep a handle on that. And those diversion investigators work really hard to keep all that in check.
So what are the qualifications? If somebody's thinking, like if we have students here now, they're thinking, gee, maybe I want to consider the DEA. What stepping stones do they have to take through college and beyond in order to be considered?
My first piece of advice for anyone looking for a career, especially in law enforcement, is to make good choices. Live
Don't
your
get
life.
Arrested.
Yes, that would be also important. But live your life like you have goals. And sometimes what you want today doesn't necessarily fit with what the goals that you really want tomorrow. So make good choices because there are peer pressure. There are things that young adults and kids are faced with today that are difficult to navigate. If you have a goal, you make good choices. If you look on DEA.gov, all of the qualifications are listed there, but basically, you have to be between 21 and 36 years of age. We don't hire anyone after their 37th birthday unless they're military or can give an age waiver for some specific experience. We're looking for people that have the core values, integrity, dedication, commitment, passion for this job. You obviously can't have a felony arrest. You have to be a U.S. citizen. There is a drug questionnaire. Being DEA, we are very picky about what your use history can be. And we would like you to not use drugs, just as a side note. I'll just put that out there as a little plug for say no. At college is a requirement, but not necessarily required to have the job. If you are a police officer already with drug-related experience and you don't have a college degree, you may qualify. So some of those little pieces are, you have to dive in a little bit and read what actually qualifies you.
So actually you could be recruiting at any of the police departments if they've got
Absolutely.
Experience in that arena.
Absolutely. Also, and I should mention, physical fitness is a big part of who we are. We want your mind healthy and your body. And in law enforcement, especially dealing with stress like we do, PT is a big component that helps us, our bodies process that stress. So we go to Quantico for our special agent training, and the physical fitness standards are also listed on DEA.gov. But it's not a difficult test, but it's one that you do have to train for so that you can pass. The academy and the training environment itself is physically and mentally rigorous and exhausting. So we want you to be in shape so that you can be trained.
And that isn't something that it's one and done. You have to stay in shape for your entire career.
Yes. Well, Sherry, I wish I could say I've done that. I do all right. It's not as good as I would like. But yes, you should stay in shape your whole career.
Yeah, because, you know, you never know when you're going to have to start running after somebody. You see it on TV sometimes, people, the bad guy's running and they have to run after him.
Yeah,
and I'm just like,
Yeah, and the next day you can't get out of bed. I've been there. Yeah.
Everything hurts. So.
And as you get older, it gets worse. I don't understand it.
It's not supposed to be that way. Okay. Other than the fact that, let me ask you this. You went to the DEA. Why not the FBI?
Oh, gosh, I would say something. I love the FBI. I do. So DEA for me was my only choice. I love the hunt. I love as a police officer, I loved protecting people. I loved being the one that got sent. You know, send me. I want to be the one to go help you. And so I wanted some of that, but I wanted it bigger. And I wanted to be part of something that was bigger than me. And It's truly a calling. DEA is a single mission agency, and we're focused on hunting and capturing the most violent and vicious violators in the United States. So for me, that mission said everything I needed. I wanted the worst of the worst, and that's what I wanted to be part of. And the family in DEA is all the same people. We're all hunters. It's a family of people who are really passionate about the oath that we took to protect this country and to protect our communities.
How is it working with the cartel and, you know, being on a border state and some of the drama that goes on around the border?
Drama is a good word for that, yes.
Yes.
So I have the entire state of Arizona, and each office has unique challenges as far as drug enforcement opportunities. The cartels that are running through Arizona are vicious and violent and evil, and there's no other way I can describe them. It is worth it every day to fight them, and it is rewarding in a lot of aspects because we do make a lot of headway, and we do really have some big seizures that we seize, you know, 500,000 fentanyl pills, and I think to myself, wow, we just saved the city of Seattle.
Yeah.
Because that to me is what that means. That's how many lives we've saved just by seizing a load of poison. So it is, there are unique opportunities. The cartels are addicted to our money. They will never stop, and they don't care about us at all. Where there is a demand, they will find a way to make the supply happen. And we are bound, I guess, to combat that as best that we can.
Can you tell us about any of the seizures you've done?
Oh, we've had some awesome seizures. We just had AG Barr and Acting Administrator Timothy Shea come to visit and do a press conference a couple months ago. And we had millions and millions and millions of dollars of fentanyl, methamphetamine, weapons, contraband on display for this to kind of announce the progress of this Operation Crystal Shield. It was an awesome experience, but we filled an entire room with 800 pounds of methamphetamine. I can't remember how many pounds of fentanyl we had in there. Absurd amount. And that was all stuff that was seized just recently, because especially now with the border restrictions and some of the stuff that's happening on the border, the size of our seizures are so much bigger because fewer people are able to traverse the border.
Yeah, they say that they are using any means possible to sneak their drugs through, and it's kind of sad that Americans are not doing rehab. Instead, they're taking these pills, and I keep saying repeatedly, stop supporting the cartel. Stop
right.
It.
I just got a call from a dear friend of mine last night who was a retired police officer. He was on 31 years, and his daughter died. She took a pill, fentanyl, and her and her boyfriend both died. And this is a friend of mine who, and a police officer who was a narcotics officer who spent his whole life trying to combat this exact problem. Drugs do not discriminate. It is one pill, one time, and it's done.
Yeah, that's so sad. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and if you do survive, then you're addicted. And so it's maybe not the first pill, but maybe it's the third.
You're
or the
playing
fourth.
Russian roulette with a you bottle are. Of pills. And what is it going to take to get through to the younger generation that this is a bad idea?
Oh God, I wish I knew. I tell my kids, and this is the advice that I give all the time. It starts with you. It starts with you in your house, you saying no, and you teaching your kids, your mom, your friends, talking about it at barbecues. It is a conversation worth having. It is a difficult conversation, but it is worth having, and it is worth telling people, do not take a pill. Do not take drugs. I don't know why we got away from that message. No is actually the right thing. When somebody
just
offers
say no.
You drugs, yeah. If there is no demand, the supply will not be there.
Yeah.
We just are so addicted as a culture, as a society, and I'm not sure what changed and why we kind of went away from the very simple basics. As a mom, I take every opportunity to educate my kids' friends, my kids. They're tired of hearing it. But I want them to know it's not okay. I can't risk losing them. And so I'll have that difficult conversation. I'll tell them what I think, because I don't want them to be in that circumstance. I don't want to plan their funeral ever.
Yeah, you're teaching them. And I think that's part of the thing is you just have to keep repeating it. This is not a good idea, taking drugs. Even if somebody, oh, it's an aspirin, you have a headache, here, take this. No, don't take meds from anybody unless you know them, your doctor, your family, unless you know who it is.
Right, right. Buy it at a pharmacy from a pharmacist, and then it's okay to take. And take the way your doctor tells you to.
Yeah, not out of somebody's trunk of their car.
No, that's probably, I mean, that's good advice, generally speaking. Not to buy anything out of a car.
So, what kind of programs does the Drug Enforcement Agency have to help people maybe get into rehab? I know I've got a couple of, on our website, we have a couple of links to help people navigate through the system. And I think people have the impression that this is a difficult thing to do. And yes, it's going to be hard because you're the one that's addicted. And getting off of it is not easy, but it's a smart thing to do. What kind of programs does the Drug Enforcement Agency have?
So, and one thing about that, when we're talking about the pills, if you take one pill one time, the power of that pill, if you don't die from it, is a full-on physical addiction, where coming off that pill makes you feel so horrible you wish you were dead. So, the addiction, the time from your first intake to addiction is almost instantaneous, which is why it's so difficult to combat the addiction piece. So DEA historically has not been in the rehabilitation game. We've not been in outreach, but we realized in the last decade that that had to be part of who we are. We had to make bigger efforts to educate the community and to try to be part of the solution, right? We need to be part of that conversation. Putting people in jail works, but it only works for a little bit and for a little piece of what we really want. And what we really want, long-term goals, is for us to be a happy, healthy community and drug-free. And the cartels to be someplace else, you know, maybe home having dinner with their families instead of selling us dope.
Or maybe so taking the pills themselves.
Yes, well, you said it, not me.
Okay.
So we have done a lot with outreach. We have currently a DEA 360 program, which is our effort to educate and outreach youth. We're doing that right now in northern Arizona here in Arizona. We're doing Yavapai County. And it's a full court press for education, right? Because we're trying to teach people that it's bad because somehow that got lost along the way. Right on the tail of that, we're going to have Operation Engage, which is another outreach program. When it comes to addiction and it comes to getting yourself help, I tried it last night. You can ask Alexa or Siri, and they'll tell you where to go and what numbers to call. People want to help you. We know that this is a problem, and nobody's going to judge you. We want you healthy. So whatever it takes for you to make that phone call, Alexa will make it for you. You don't have to touch the phone, which I loved. I just tried it. Get yourself help. Get yourself a support system, and try your best to overcome what's got a grip on you.
When are these programs going to come to Southern Arizona?
Well, we're working on that. We started in Northern Arizona because we have a big need, and eventually we will work it around the rest of the state. You can always reach out to DEA.gov. There are several of online. JustThinkTwice.gov is one of them, and JustSayNo is another .gov. Those are education programs for both bilingual, for youth between kindergarten up through college age. And some of them are off the shelf. You can do programs at home with your kids. You can do them online yourself, get yourself educated. We want to be part of the solution, and we're trying to put as much information out there as we can.
I understand that they're trying to make drugs legal.
Yes.
I just heard that on the news last night. I went, what?
Yes.
What do you think is going to happen with that?
Well, it's a disaster. It's waiting to happen. And just my personal opinion, like, I don't make the law. I just enforce it. But it's not going to go well. You know, saying that it's okay doesn't make it okay. That's not...
And I think that's part of the mixed message. You know, Colorado did their thing and California did their thing. And the kids are like, oh, well, it's got to be okay because they did it.
Right. And unfortunately, what happens, the repercussions of that is that crime goes up, right? Because the idea is, okay, now we're going to tax this, or if you're using, you're not going to be in trouble. Well, the truth is, we don't go after users. That's not who we are. We go after the people who are preying on the users. We go after predators. That's who we're after. That's who law enforcement pursues. We want the bad guys, not the victims.
Yeah, I was going to say the victims.
And that's kind of what they become. I mean, at some point they participate in their victimology for sure, but at some point they truly become victims of their addiction and of these cartels that have no regard for them as people.
It's unfortunate. You're just somebody we're going to use. Give me your money and I'll give you all these pills. And I think part of it is the way they recruit little kids. We're talking grade school kids to sell this stuff. You can make money. You know, I'll give you money to pay you to go sell these pills to somebody else.
Yeah. And I just, this friend of mine whose daughter died tragically, was just telling me the story that he had seized some Xanax pills. And he said, now in retrospect, I realized they were probably had fentanyl in them. But at the time he thought they were a kid just having, you know, his mom's pills in his bag. So it's there. It's there in their schools. It's there in our communities. The face of drugs, what we considered bad guys, what, you know, you picture in your mind isn't necessarily true anymore. Because they're pills and they don't seem as ugly and dirty and scary, our kids are carrying them and selling them. And people are dying from those pills.
And parents, it's happening right under their nose and they don't recognize it. Like some of these apps they have on their telephone that, you know, they can hide. And parent will look at the phone and think everything's fine, but actually it's not fine. It's not fine.
Oh, I checked my kids. I tried to have them microchipped. I took them to the vet and said, you can do it for my dog. Why can't you do it? Apparently that was illegal. I thought that was a good idea. But
I think it's a good idea.
Nothing, yes, they have nothing private because that's who I am. But they know what I do. And I don't have to be a cool mom. I can be a parent because they know that I love them enough to actually have them hate me. That's fine. I want them to survive until their 20s and then they could pay for their own therapy to get through it. I don't know.
Exactly. I told my son the same thing. I don't care. At least you're alive to, you know, be mad at me.
Yep.
That's the way it goes.
I want to protect them, and I will do whatever I have to do to protect them and to protect your kids and everyone else's kids.
Yeah, it's a tough, tough industry that you're in because it seems like it's never ending. We're going to take a quick break. Hope you'll stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Hi, I'm Nathan Chabon, producer for the Law Matters Live Show that airs Saturday mornings at 8, when our listeners ask questions of the people who have answers. On our next show, the Law Matters University High School interns will host a conversation with their political science instructors on current political issues. This show depends on your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute. If you missed us live, check out Law Matters on iTunes, Google Play, and of course, Law Matters 1030 website. Now, get your questions ready and join our conversation at 790-2040.
Hi, this is Sherry. If you think your current interest rate is high and refinancing is on your mind, give me a call at 520-310-9900. Maybe you're thinking about purchasing a new home while rates are low. give me a call at 520-310-9900. Perhaps you just want to know how a reverse mortgage can improve your life. Give me a call at 520-310-9900. I can help you with all your mortgage needs, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
Daylight is fading, and the temperature is dropping. You're not only cold, hungry, and lost in a densely wooded area, you're injured. Time is of the essence. SARCI is a highly trained team of dedicated volunteers who work closely with Pima County Search and Rescue to help people in critical situations just like this. To join an exclusive team of heroes, go to SARCI.org. That's SARCI.org. We need your knowledge, experience, and of course, your generous spirit.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
This is Nathan Chabon, producer for Law Matters. I have a goal to reach, and I need your help. I want to put the DEA out of business. That's right, the Drug Enforcement Agency. If you have an addiction problem or know someone who does, please reach out to lawmatters1030.org and click the DEA tab for more information. Reaching out is the first step. We have the resources if you have the will. You can beat this demon and help me put the Drug Enforcement Agency out of business.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is a special agent in charge of the Drug Enforcement Agency, Sherry Oz. And I think you heard Nathan's ad. He wants to put you out of business.
I love that. I'm on board.
That's great. Yeah, he's a good kid, and both our students from the university are very good kids, and I'm really happy that they chose to do this internship. We've opened some eyes. Definitely. You said you had General Barr, Attorney General Barr down.
We did. It was awesome.
Tell us about, you know, what was the reason for coming, and tell us about the visit.
So it was awesome, just because it was very cool to be in that room with him. He is so well spoken, and he's so smart. So I love just, for me personally, it was just an exciting visit, and I learned a lot just being in the same room with him. So we had a press conference, a national press conference, where we kind of went over the progress of this Operation Crystal Shield. And Operation Crystal Shield was an all-out enforcement operation done primarily by DEA in key cities throughout the United States. So Phoenix and Arizona in general are really, I said that we're the tip of the spear. We are the Sinaloa cartel. We're it. It's all coming through here. So during Operation Crystal Shield, we focused primarily on methamphetamine. Currently, we have two major threats, one being fentanyl, the other being methamphetamine. And the big problem with them, as opposed to heroin, cocaine, and even marijuana in years past, we kind of knew how much marijuana, cocaine, and heroin was being produced because you could tell based on land, their agriculture, right? So you could see, oh, there's a field with this amount, and this is what it will produce, whatever. With our synthetic drugs of today, the quantity of, or the potential quantity is infinite. We have no idea because they're making it in a lab. So Crystal Shield, kind of getting on the front side of that, was meth is going to be a problem. It is a problem. It's going to be a bigger problem, and we need to have enforcement efforts directed towards combating methamphetamine trafficking. So obviously all eight cities, even with COVID, and Operation Crystal Shield was launched before COVID, we had amazing results just in this directed enforcement. So Mr. Barr and our administrator came to kind of announce the results and talk about why it's important to combat methamphetamine and tell the cartels, watch out, we're coming.
Yeah, and here it is. And yeah. I think you guys work both sides of the border, don't you?
We do. DEA is a worldwide organization. We are, I think, in 60-some countries. We have 90-some posts in 60-some countries. So we actually work with governments throughout the world because everybody has a drug problem. So we liaison and help them in their enforcement efforts as well.
So how does America compare to the other countries?
Well,
sad.
It is sad because we love drugs more, I guess, and we have more money to spend on them. So where there's a demand, the supply will follow. So we're their best customer. And wow. Frankly, they're addicted to our money, so they're not going anywhere.
You know, I watched, I think it was on Netflix, I watched a documentary about the families that create these drugs that are sold in America. And it's generations of families that, you know, just keep, this is their business. This, you know, they don't have the fruit stand on the corner or the farmer's market thing. They have a drug making business and
Right. They
keep peddling it through, you know, to America because I guess we're not smart enough not to take it.
And the violence associated in those families is unreal.
Yeah.
If you saw what was happening in Mexico, and even just if you look it up online, you can find public information about the extreme violence. Anyone who gets in the way of a cartel is killed, and without regard for families, moms, dads, kids, dogs, whatever your responsibilities are. It is a ruthless and horrific road to get to the United States, and it is stained with the blood of thousands of people.
And they'll kill your family to get even with you.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, when we had Polo on, he was saying that, you know, they'll walk into the mayor's office with a attaché full of cash and say, you know, this is for you, and this is what you'll do. And if you say no, you're dead.
Right. And so what do you do?
So what do you do?
When you think about that and you think about wonderful people who have incredible integrity, who are not forced into a situation that is unthinkable, and the things that they will do to protect their family or save their family go against everything that they believe in, and it's a scenario that nobody wants to put themselves in.
It's so true, and some of them are just because of their job or their geographic location, they're stuck.
Right.
So what do we do on the border? What's the strategic plan for our border between here and there?
So we are working diligently on the border. My agents, my analysts, my investigators, they have not stopped. The amount of work and the amount of effort that goes into keeping drugs out of this country is really unbelievable. With COVID and everyone's got to stay home, we didn't have that opportunity because our nation is at risk. And especially if you add in isolation and some of these things that kind of go across with COVID, my guys have had to work harder because they know that we're in danger. And it is a full court press. The restrictions at the border have helped us with some of our methodology, but of course, traffickers find a way to get around it. And we're doing a really good job of staying on top of it and stopping things. We have a pretty good idea based on the fact that methamphetamine prices have quadrupled since COVID hit, that we're actually having a pretty good impact, and we're preventing a large quantity of drugs from getting into the United States. However, some stuff is getting through.
Yeah.
So we work diligently.
Can't be everywhere.
Yep. And we have to really drill down on those cartels and our investigations. So some of it may not be instantaneous. We may not have an arrest today, but we'll get you tomorrow because we're watching. And we're going to get you. It's just a matter of time.
When somebody is put in jail and they're addicted to drugs and they don't, I don't think, I don't know, I've never been to jail.
Me neither. I don't think I would like the food.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they have a program in the facility to help people detox. So if they're going into jail and it's kind of a cold turkey situation, isn't there a program or should there be a program to help them see the error of their ways, so to speak, before they get out of jail again?
So certain jails and federal and state penitentiaries are different, of course, and jails and prisons are different. But most forward-thinking rehabilitation centers now offer a drug next program. They're offering counseling. The detox part, you know, it doesn't matter if you detox at a hotel, in your bedroom, or in jail, it's going to be uncomfortable. And uncomfortable is a really weak word for what you go through. But getting through that, the good thing about the jail is that you can't go to your dealer and, I mean, at least the dealer that you usually use. So the detox is, well, it's going to happen. Jails are now realizing that it has to be some continuing education so that they can give you the skills. Because the idea of jail isn't just punishment, it's also rehabilitation. So they're looking for ways to make you better so that someday when you reenter society, you can make better choices. Whether it works or not, I don't know the exact numbers. I'm going to go with the recidivism rate being not as great as it should be, or bigger than it should be. The drug problem probably goes hand in hand with that.
I know the FBI hasn't, because we have it on our website. If you go to the FBI tab, they have a movie out called Chasing the Dragon.
Yes, we did that in production with them. One of our former administrators is on with the director. I made my kids watch it.
Yes.
And my son started crying and said, "Mommy, I'll never use drugs." And so now we watch it at least twice a year or so.
It's time for our...
Yes.
Remember, you promised.
Yes. The language, because I want them to be scared. The language is tough in there. So I always warn parents, it's not easy to watch. The first time you watch it, you'll probably cry because it is very sad. It's heartbreaking. But it is a very good documentary because it gives you a real life example of just how bad people can get and the bad choices we make because of addiction.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? It happens to people. When people, you get injured, you have surgery. I went to the dentist and he gave me a prescription of these painkillers that was, you know, like 30 of these. Why do I need 30 of those? What did you do with my mouth? And I never took them, but I still have them. And I was like, this is how people get addicted.
Right.
And it can happen to anybody.
Yes. We do have people that become accidental addicts. And that's why we work now very closely with doctors to try and with manufacturers to come up with good prescribing guidelines. We're not doctors. We don't practice medicine. We never claim to, but we do deal in addiction by default. And so we would like a non-addicted society so that we don't have the demand.
Yes.
So we are working. We're part of that education piece, trying to make sure that doctors are also not doing any harm.
And that's really holding them accountable. That's huge. I mean, you know,
right.
For a dentist to give out that much drugs. And I had just, you know, you're all fuzzy when you leave the dental office, and a friend was driving me. So we have to go fill this prescription. I had no idea what it was, or, you know, I just paid for it and went home. But a couple of days later, when I realized, you know, wow, he gave me a lot of unnecessary drugs.
Right. And the thing with you is now that's in your medicine cabinet and you know it's there. The problem in society, what we're seeing a lot with our young people, is that the kids know it's there too.
Yeah.
And so the kids will go and take those pills out of your medicine cabinet, and they actually are prescriptions. And those are the ones that if you're sick and you have a problem, or if you're in pain and you need them, that's when you take them. But now we have prescriptions in the hands of kids who that starts them on their road to addiction as well.
Or they start selling them and realize that this is something they could do to make money.
which is a problem. So we do have twice a year, DEA does the take back program, which is one of our initiatives that's been around for about 10 years to get you to clean out your pill cabinet. Because the idea of what to do with prescriptions is, you know, uncomfortable. Do I throw them in the garbage? Do I flush them in the toilet? What do I do with them? So we offer this take back where you can come, no questions asked. You bring your unused medications or whatever you have, and you put it in the bin, and we get rid of it for you.
Yeah, they highly recommend not flushing it down the toilet.
Yes, they do.
That's not cool. Somehow it's going to come back.
Right. But if you have somebody in your house that has a problem, and it's a problem for you to have pills in your house, you know, do what you have to do. We will always take it from you, and we'll make sure that it's disposed of and destroyed.
I think the Sheriff's Department as well as TPD also have facility in their headquarters where you can just drop off unwanted drugs.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of a 24/7, 365 situation.
Right.
But it's good to remind people, hey, clean out the drug cabinet.
Right. I just found some expired ones from like 1997, which is horrible because I'm advocating cleaning.
Yeah, well, I know about this program about, you know, if you want to get rid of your drugs. In some drugs, and I was talking to a doctor about that. He said some drugs over time will weaken. Other drugs become more potent.
Oh, horrible, right?
So you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't ask for a list. I just like, okay, great. So how does Arizona compare to California as far as drug use and people trying to traffic drugs into the state?
So we have a different, every state has a different kind of look at the same problem. And Arizona, we have mostly the Sinaloa cartel coming through. So we see the same drugs, but delivered differently or packaged differently is what we see and combat. California has several trafficking routes, and they have Sinaloa cartel, and they have the CJNG, which is a new and very violent cartel. One of the family members from, you know, Sinaloa cartel breaks off. So they actually work well together. I guess they don't kill each other as often as...
There is many.
Yeah. Right. So California has several cartels that are trafficking through California. Obviously, they have a very big state. They have a very high population. And they have a more permissive state. So things, they have a bigger problem than we do. Not to say that we don't have a big problem. We do. Arizona is also a waypoint, just like California is. Once the drugs come through the southwest border, be it San Ysidro or Nogales, those are waypoints, and then from those waypoints, they get repackaged and delivered throughout the United States. So it's kind of comparing apples to oranges, but the apples to apples piece is that there are big problems, and we need to be diligent on the southwest border, whether it's in California, Texas, New Mexico, or Arizona.
Does California have as many tunnels as we have?
So the tunnels, some of those tunnels are amazing. If those people could put their efforts into something
positive,
good for their community, it would be amazing what they could do. They do. We get equal numbers of tunnels that go through. California has some really big tunnels. Arizona has lesser constructed tunnels. It's a problem in both places. We know about it. We're diligent, and we are constantly looking, and that's part of what we're searching for all the time.
And the homes that, you know, some of these homes that appear to be vacant, but yet they're being used to repackage drugs. I mean, if the people in the neighborhoods just observed what was going on and knew what they were looking at, this is what we're trying to do, is educate people. This stuff is happening right under your nose.
Right.
And what are the signs that you would tell somebody who's living in some of these areas what to look for and be suspicious of?
So one of the things, and we were just talking about this last night in conversation, If you see something, say something. If you live in a neighborhood, you know who lives in your neighborhood with you. You have a good idea. And even if you don't think you know, you actually do, because you recognize people, you recognize cars. Mm-hmm. When you have a neighborhood, if you have a vacant house anyway, watch that house. If people are coming and going, that's not good for your neighborhood anyway, because there's potentially a thousand bad scenarios that could happen there. But if you have people that are coming and going, if you have different cars, if you're noticing, you know, things over the windows so that you can't see, and not shutters from, you know, not plantation shutters, but if you put aluminum foil over your window, and that wasn't there before, pay attention to that. If the lights are on in the middle of the night, if the air conditioning is running 24 hours a day, if they have dehumidifiers, or you see the electric cables that are all of a sudden plugged into your electric cables, which means you're now funding a drug trafficking operation because there's no electricity in that house. Yeah. As you see things, anything that you see that you think is suspicious, write it down. Call it in. Pay attention. If somebody goes and checks it out and it turns out it's a brand new neighbor, well, won't that be funny in 10 years when you have them over for cocktails? But for right now...
Something to laugh about, but yeah.
Yes. But for right now, you have to protect your home, your property, and your children. So pay attention to what's happening in your neighborhood, and if there's a problem, call. If there's nothing going on, there's no harm.
I spoke to somebody this week, actually... Thursday or Friday, and he's got a situation. He lives over by Star Pass, and there's a park there, government property that's supposed to be closed at a certain time. And he said every night people are up there selling drugs. They come, you know, people drive up there and buy and then leave, and it's constant stream of cars. How do you report something like that if your local sheriff and your local TPD are too busy? How do you report that?
Every night you report it. Every night you call it in, because it matters. Sometimes we have to document our failures, because that is what makes us better. That neighbor who's seeing that activity, that's somebody who wants their community better. Be the squeaky wheel. Get the grease. Get them out of that park, because that will affect your property value. Because you know what happens when somebody goes to buy drugs and they don't have enough money? They come break into your car. And they steal the stuff out of your car so that they can sell it, so they can buy the money to fund the cartel and to get their next fix. So yeah. You don't want to be a victim of somebody else's problem, and subsequently a victim of the cartels by default. So you do what you need to protect your family. The police department wants to help you. They don't want drugs in their community. None of us do. Be the squeaky wheel. Make sure that you're getting the service that you're entitled to.
Yeah, it was kind of funny, because I walked into the house and there's binoculars sitting on a stand. I'm like, what, are you spying on your neighbors? And he said, no, they're selling drugs at the top of the hill here. And, you know, okay, we've got a caller calling in. Mike, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm the one with the binoculars here.
Mike, I like that a lot.
Well, I wish it was not a reason I had to use them. I'd rather look at the stars. But I maybe missed the last 30 seconds or so of your conversation, but the gist of it is these trailheads are open to the public, but they're closed, and there's signs of them supposed to be closed from dusk till dawn, and there's a number of trailheads around the city, and it's common with all of them, but a few cars will go up there right after dark, and cars will come up one or two every 15-20 minutes, and one or two will come down every, you know, right afterwards. And this happens from when the sun goes down till 4 a.m. And this has been going on since May, and it could be gone on longer than that. I just haven't noticed, but the cars are loud. They speed. They're after hours. We've heard gunshots. And the sheriff's department is aware of this. We've gotten TPD involved. And we'll send patrol cars up there for an hour or two and chase people away, and then they'll leave, and it'll just return. So nothing's being solved with this. Is this kind of activity, is this too far down in the supply chain for DEA to deal with?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, we need help.
And we will give that to you. Can we talk after? And I can get some information from you, and we'll partner up with TPD, and we'll make sure that they're lacking resources too. It's a tough time in law enforcement. Yes. We're happy to, although our mission is bigger fish, right? And we're always going after the worst of the worst. We live here too, and we want our community safe. So sometimes that is our biggest fish because it matters most, and we want to help our community. So we're happy to partner with TPD and help them get the resources they need so that we can clean that up for you.
Okay, Mike, send me your phone number and I will pass it on, okay?
Okay, will do.
All right, thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. And this is some of the things that do go on, and people just don't know where to turn to, and our resources are so limited that, you know, you can't just set up a stakeout and, you know, watch people and photograph them. It's that they don't have the manpower. But you right. work with all the agencies.
We do. We have awesome partnerships in Arizona. It's nothing like I've ever experienced anyplace else. We work well with everybody. Because we're united against a common enemy, we're all friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes everybody sometimes to make something happen. It can't be my agency's against your agency like it used to be. I remember those days.
Oh, I do.
I'm not going to tell you.
I have to remind them, like, I love the FBI. I love
We're friends, and remember?
I do. I really do. Now, I didn't before.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left. What words of wisdom do you want our listeners to walk away with?
So what I would say is be the change. It starts with you. It starts with you in your house. If we want to overcome this enormous epidemic that is challenging the core of who we are in the United States, it starts with you. It starts in your house. Be the change. Educate people. When you go to a barbecue, don't say drugs are okay. They're not.
Yeah.
The first time you get your car broken into, you'll have a different idea about what's okay. And some of us are very noncommittal. Oh, I don't care what that person does. Who am I to judge? And yes, I agree with you. However, when they break into your house to steal your stuff, to pay for their habit, it becomes your problem. This is a bigger problem than we can imagine. And we need your help. We need you to help educate people. So get educated. Have difficult conversations.
Watch that Chasing the Dragon movie.
Yes.
It's on our website, lawmatters1030.org. If you watch that movie, you will be convinced that you need to get involved.
Right. And have your kids watch it. Again, the language, I have to warn. But it works. It is scary. It's hard to watch.
It is. It is. It gave me goosebumps. I'm like, oh, my God, why would anybody want to get involved with drugs after watching something like this? I want to thank you for coming on and enlightening us. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
And it was my pleasure. Thank you.
I will give Mike's phone number to Polo.
Perfect.
Okay. I'll do that.
He's the right guy. That's who I would have given it to, too.
See? Okay, you have a good day. Have a great weekend. Thank you for coming on. And next week, our interns will be interviewing their political science instructors. It should be a good show.